Get this going. Item number 13, I understand we're going to do 13 and 14 together, so I'm going to read this in as basically kind of amalgamate them together. This is a time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, consider adoption of a cease and desist order, and to consider adoption of a revised NPDES National Pollution Discharge Elimination System Permit and Master Reclamation Permit for the Forestville Wastewater District, Forestville Water District Wastewater Treatment, Reclamation, and Disposal Facility. This item's been properly noticed. Will all those expect to give testimony in this matter please stand and raise your right hand and take the following oath? Do you swear and affirm that you tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Fantastic. So the presentation as it goes, staff will go first, discharger followed by the interested public. Ms. Kathy Goodwin. Excuse me?
Could you note into the record that Mr. Massey is not present because he's recused himself?
Yes, he actually did that before the break, and
I think
there was too much noise to get that done. So Mr. Bill Massey has left the room and recused himself from this item.
Okay. So good afternoon, Chairman Noren and members of the board. My name is Kathy Goodwin, and I am staff to the regional board. And as the chair noted, I'll be giving the staff presentation for the cease and desist order and the proposed renewal of the NPDES permit for the Forestville Water District. I will be talking about both items together in this presentation, but after public comment, you will be voting on each item separately.
That's correct.
So let's see, these two proposed items are included as items 13 and 14 in your agenda packages. They were originally scheduled to come to the board in June. However, we did not have a quorum for this item until today. The cease and desist order package consists of the executive officer's summary report, the order, and the public notice. And item 14, the permit, consists of the executive officer's summary report, a very large permit document, followed by the response to comments, staff changes document, three comment letters, and the public hearing notice. And at this time, I'd like to enter the file into the record. Just briefly, I wanted to talk about the existing permit. Was adopted in October 2004 for a five-year term ending in October of 2009. It was administratively extended due to the fact that Forestville submitted their report of waste discharge on time, and it will remain effective until February 29th of 2012, and the new permit effective date is set for March 1st. One. There it is. Okay, so the red star on this map shows where Forestville is in relation to other familiar landmarks. We've got Santa Rosa and Highway 101 over here running from north to south, and the Russian River runs kind of north and westerly through here. The Forestville treatment plant is in the Green Valley Creek watershed, which is tributary to the Russian River, and it serves both the town of Forestville as well as the area called Mirabelle Heights, right here by the blue diamond, which is situated right along the Russian River. This aerial view is just to orient you, give you a picture of the plant. I got to get this right. So here we've got the headworks where the influent wastewater comes into the plant and flow metering occurs. We've got the aeration pond for treatment, settling pond, microfiltration building, chlorine contact chamber, building where the chlorine and dechlorination chemicals are, and then an on-site storage pond. And then there's a pipeline that runs along the pedestrian trail here, and they discharge to Jones Creek right about here. the map facility I used for this wouldn't let me put anything else on here, so that was the best I could do. Oh, wrong way. And then this is what's inside of the microfiltration building. This is, you know, a microfiltration unit. It provides filtering so that the district can achieve advanced wastewater treatment to comply with the basin plan requirement for discharges to surface waters and for reclamation on urban sites. Catch up. So during dry periods of the year, Forestville delivers recycled water for irrigation of urban sites in the town of Forestville and to agricultural sites in the areas around Forestville. And they irrigate primarily vineyards and pasture land, and there is some frost protection of vineyards. Forestville has also accepted disinfected secondary effluent from Grayton treatment plant, and Forestville treats that water to tertiary and uses it for reclamation as well as their own wastewater that they treat. And on occasion, Forestville has sent disinfected treated effluent to Grayton for storage and to supplement frost protection. Forestville also depends on surface water discharges during the winter season, and the length of time that they discharge varies based on the weather. And here's an aerial that kind of pulls all those pieces together. We've got the treatment plant here. We've got Jones Creek running along here and Green Valley Creek running this direction towards the Russian River. Then we've got their urban reclamation areas, some of which I couldn't fit on here, but there's three main sites in the town of Forestville. We've got agricultural irrigation sites ranging from small ones over here to large ones, such as this one at the Iron Horse Vineyards property. Forestville also uses an off-site storage pond located on the Iron Horse Vineyards property. And then I showed Grayton's treatment plant on here because of the connection between the two, so you can kind of see it all together. And this slide shows Forestville's discharge to Jones Creek. The effluent is conveyed to the creek through an underground pipeline that comes out under this pedestrian bridge and then cascades down into Jones Creek. Now I'd like to talk to you briefly about the proposed permit. There really haven't been many significant changes to Forestville's wastewater treatment, reclamation, and disposal permit or facilities during the permit term. The proposed permit will continue to serve as a master reclamation permit, which means that they're, you know, providing waste, their reclamation or their recycled water to numerous use sites, you know, that aren't owned by them. And it will also continue to contain the same effluent limits for advanced wastewater treatment as the existing permit does. There are some changes to effluent limits that I wanted to highlight. The new permit removes effluent limits for lead and zinc. It adds effluent limits for cyanide and nitrate, and these are based on a reasonable potential analysis that was done as we prepared this permit. It contains more stringent effluent limits for total trihalomethanes that are based on the Department of Public Health's current objectives for that pollutant. And it contains more stringent effluent limits for chlorine residual, which are based on US EPA's objectives for protection of aquatic life. And these limits are being implemented statewide now. There's no change with regard to copper and dichlorobromomethane effluent limits, so they still have those in their permit based on the reasonable potential analysis. But the permit does have an have interim effluent limits for chlorine residual and a compliance schedule so that the district has time to come into compliance with new effluent limits for chlorine residual, or the more stringent chlorine effluent limits. So now a little bit about the reclamation requirements in the permit. They're drawn from the four key regulatory documents that I've identified on this slide. This, I believe, is the third or fourth reclamation permit that we've adopted since the State Board adopted the recycled water policy and the landscape irrigation permit in 2009, and this permit implements many of the provisions from those regulatory documents. The permit also includes requirements for protection of public health as mandated by the Department of Public Health Services recycled water regulations, and it also provides an allowance for runoff that is truly incidental, consistent with our basin plan low threat discharge amendment. The proposed permit includes separate requirements for existing and future reclamation sites. For existing sites, the permit requires Forestville to submit information to demonstrate that existing recycled water use sites are being irrigated at agronomic rates and that existing storage ponds are constructed to protect groundwater. The technical report requirements provide Forestville with a generous amount of time to submit the required information in recognition of the fact that they are a small discharger with limited resources. For any new recycled water use sites that they might propose to add, the permit requires submittal of reports demonstrating agronomic rates and best management practices in advance of providing recycled water to any of these new use sites. And the permit also has a 30-day public comment period for any irrigation management plan submitted for new reclamation sites. I'll talk briefly about the cease and desist order now. This has been prepared because Forestville hasn't yet achieved compliance with final effluent limits for copper, which is a California toxics rule pollutant, and the state implementation policy, which implements the California toxics rule, required compliance with final effluent limits for priority pollutants by May 2010. So we can't include interim limits or a compliance schedule in the permit, but the water code does allow us to do such in a cease and desist order. So the cease and desist order does give Forestville additional time to comply with their copper effluent limits, the final ones. It gives them four more years, and in the meantime, they need to comply with the interim copper effluent limits that are in their existing permit. We received three comment letters on the permit, and they all came from representatives of the Forestville Water District. So Forestville's comments were primarily focused on the costs of complying with the permit. Staff recognizes that the cost of regulatory compliance is more difficult for small districts because they don't have as many users to spread the costs over. Staff met with Forestville representatives a couple of times during the time that we were preparing the permit and tried to address their concerns where we could. The proposed permit provides them with an additional 4 years to achieve compliance with copper, as I mentioned. And it gives them the full permit term to demonstrate that existing reclamation is at agronomic rates. Other technical report requirements associated with reclamation apply only if Forestville adds new reclamation users. And then staff reduced and eliminated some monitoring requirements and increased monitoring primarily for parameters that the discharger can monitor with field instruments, things like DO and temperature. And for example, we increased effluent and receiving water monitoring for dissolved oxygen and temperature to assess impacts on the small receiving water stream that they discharge to. And then where the monitoring increased, we also made provision for reducing or eliminating some of the monitoring if, after they've collected data, it shows no reasonable potential. And this would be primarily for nutrients and salts. And then finally, the stricter monitoring requirements for chlorine residual are being implemented statewide, but the permit does give them the entire permit term to come into compliance. The second bullet, they expressed concern about the potential for violations and penalties, particularly with regard to their coliform. The permit establishes a monitoring location for coliform following the chlorine contact chamber. The district requested that monitoring point be moved to a point before the chlorine contact chamber, but after the microfilters, claiming that the microfilters remove all coliform. However, Department of Public Health requirements don't allow for that move. They clearly require monitoring after the contact chamber. So we were unable to make this change in response to the district's request. And then finally, they expressed concern about the permit being too long and repetitive. And staff can't argue with that. This is a very long permit. It uses the permit template that was prepared by the state board. We've been hearing that the state board has plans to try to simplify the permit, but we're also looking at ways in-house to try to make changes in the future to try to make these permits a bit more streamlined. So to bring this all together, in response to the discharger's comments, staff did make some changes. We eliminated certain monitoring requirements, such as for lead and zinc in effluent and receiving water, settable solids, BOD, and priority pollutant scan in the receiving water. And then we also provided for reduction or removal of monitoring requirements for nutrients and salts if there is no reasonable potential. And then we added an economic analysis to kind of pull this all together and describe how we did respond to the discharger's concerns about the economics of complying with this permit. After the public comment period was over, staff recognized that there were some other changes that were needing to be made, correction of errors, clarification of language. This slide gives examples of the types of changes we made. All of those changes are identified in the salmon-colored attachment in your agenda package. It's attachment 1B, and they're laid out all very specifically. And actually, there's one other thing, one very important last-minute revision to the order. I understand we have a new board chair, and the current order has Jeffrey's name. So, just
yeah. I'm okay with it.
I know you're okay with that. Terry set me up to that. Anyway, that does conclude my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. And then following that, staff's recommendation would be to open the hearing for public comments and then adopt the orders with two separate votes. And just a reminder that the CDO does require a roll call vote.
Thank you for that reminder, Kathy, and thank you for your presentation.
Are there any questions?
Board members, comments or questions? I have to agree with you. That's a lot of pages for 0.13 million gallons a day.
And the template, you know, applies the same way, whether it's large discharger or a small one.
I have to say, it strikes me that this is process. This is a process issue in-house, right? That this isn't the first time we've seen this permit. It probably won't be the last time. But this is a big permit for a small discharger, and I I'm actually glad that you recognize the fact that that's so.
Mm-hmm. And we're trying to work on that.
Let me ask you too, Kathy. This is also not the first time we've seen copper as being a problem. We saw it at Guerneville. We've seen it in other places as well. Copper is just going to be a problem out there with CTR on these types of facilities. And so, a CDO. I recognize why a CDO is being put in place and asked for, but what in essence the remark or the written statement in here is that it could be from copper pipes, of which this district really has probably very little control or jurisdictional requirement. So what do they do?
You know, we've had, as you recognize, copper is probably one of the most common CTR pollutants that we see as having reasonable potential. And we've had several dischargers in our region address that through kind of a sequential process where they've looked at sources, and for the most part, they have identified copper pipe as being the most likely. They've done adjustments, you know, of pH in their water system to see if that would help. And, you know, over time, one by one, these dischargers have concluded that they've done all they could. They still haven't quite met those stringent effluent limits. And so one by one, we've seen dischargers do a special study called a water effect ratio study. It actually goes out and measures how the specific effluent, the toxicity that is associated with a specific effluent, and then comes up with a multiplier that you apply to the effluent limit, and it results in a higher limit. And it's not actually an effluent, you know, we're not modifying the effluent limit. We're taking advantage of the way that EPA has set up the limits for these hardness-based metals. Each one is, you know, goes. It's a calculation based on hardness, but it allows for the water effect ratio to be developed and applied as part of that process. So we've already last January adopted the permits for Windsor, I think McKinleyville, Fortuna, and one other northern facility where we did accept the water effect ratios. You're going to see a couple more of those coming your way, one more this year. So that has been the route that a lot of dischargers are going. And once they've done that, typically reasonable potential goes away. The study is able to show that the characteristics of the effluent are such that they bind the copper such that it is not causing toxicity to the aquatic organisms.
And I believe that there's some staff discussion in here about that and about maybe Ukiah did it and the costs associated with that. It's no small bill. It's not something that is, I'm sure given probably MMPs potentially for ongoing copper effluent limitation problems, then, you know, maybe it makes sense that way. But still, and maybe we'll hear more about this in a minute, but that cost of compliance, if in essence we have a chronic or a problem that's out there that's essentially everywhere, it should be nice to get around that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's, you know, the cost of doing the study is not small.
Correct.
But when you consider the fact that a discharger is subject to mandatory minimum penalties, short of that, you know, at $3,000, you know, a violation, it doesn't take long, you know, to pay off the cost of a water effect ratio study. We've heard different costs, depending on who does the studies. We've heard costs ranging from $35,000 to over $100,000. But the ones that we've handled most recently have been at that lower range. You know, so that's the best information that I have in regard to that study.
Yeah, maybe we'll hear more about that in a minute. Any comments or questions? We'll come back in one moment, Kathy, then. I've got two speaker cards. You gentlemen have been so darn patient all day long. Between Ron Walker and David Long, I'll give you the choice of which one wants to go first.
I think that's me.
Okay.
Oh, good afternoon, board members. Thank you for allowing me some time to speak to you about this particular agenda item. My name is David Long. I am a senior principal at Belgian Race Consulting Engineers, and I also function as the district engineer to the Forestville Water District, who is the owner-operator of the wastewater treatment facilities in the community. Along with a senior engineer in our office, I was the author of the report of waste discharge that was used in part as the basis for the formulation of the draft permit that is before you. And I also function as an advisor to the district when they develop their annual budget and go through that exercise. Before I go through a little bit of the specifics of my presentation, I would like to mention that throughout the whole, I don't know, probably 3 or 3.5 year process from when we prepared the report of waste discharge up until now, I had pretty regular communication with Kathy in the development of the permit, and we always acted in a very professional and thoughtful manner, and we at times agreed to disagree, but those instances were usually followed by disclaimers such as, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that because it's required by the basin plan, or there are a federal or a state regulation that needs to be applied, and I'm sorry, I can't do that. So that's kind of an indication to me that this permit is not kind of the major problem for Forestville. It's really a larger problem of process and, yeah, and regulation. So I'm glad that you, David, recognized the process and the kind of 200-page document in there. My read of it kind of assigns half of that document to I'll call a rationale and justification section to say why they had to do all the things they had to do. And it just makes it very difficult for Forestville to use the permit and kind of read through it and recognize what it is that they have to comply with. And it would be nice if it was a more usefully organized document in the future. So Forestville and other similar small districts are really suffering under the pressure of increasingly stringent performance requirements that are born out of this kind of justification rationale. And I want to just give you a really brief near past historical perspective of why Forestville is a poster child for this suffering. In 2003, the new microfiltration equipment was added to the plant. Before that, it was a secondary treatment plant that was owned and operated by the Sonoma County Water Agency. And just a year later, Forestville took over the operation and ownership responsibilities of the plant, along with the newly adopted waste discharge and MPDS requirements that are now in place. Since then, the plant has performed pretty well. It really produces good quality effluent. They certainly struggle, like every other plant, to comply with every discharge limit every time. So certainly copper, chlorine residual, and chlorine byproducts are the majority of the things that they struggle with, but they meet them a lot of the time. And one thing that they're really struggling with now is a gradual accumulation of biomass in their ponds that is held back by the microfilters. It's producing good quality effluent, but it is slowly making it more and more difficult for the hydraulic detention times to function as they were designed in the plant. So we're helping them with those problems right now, but they need money to solve that kind of thing. Forestville has about 450 service connections. It's a really small community. It represents those 450 physical connections are characterized by 650 equivalent single family dwellings. It's primarily a residential community. There are a few commercial and retail connections in the downtown core area, and there are no industries in town. So you could characterize the wastewater going into the plant as pretty much primarily domestic in character. The Forestville annual operating budget is just $750,000. It's $750,000 on the sewer side. That supports four staff. That's all they have. Four staff members to run an entire community's water system and wastewater system. Two of those staff are office people that do all the billing and handle all the customer interactions and do the accounting. And then there are two operations personnel, one of which is Ron, and he also functions as the general manager. So they are pretty lean on staff, and they're doing as good a job as they can. In the past 4 years, they have implemented rate increases to try and cover their costs and deal with the requirements of permit conditions, and those increases have ranged between 4% and 8% per year. Even so, to keep this plant running and try and meet its current design and performance expectations, they're considering borrowing $300,000 in this next fiscal year and experiencing 6% per year increases in their user demand fees for the next 3 years. So it's not an insignificant exercise for them to do that. Their current sewer service rates are $1,300 per year, and that translates to about $110 a month. It's already one of the highest in the county, and it is slightly above the threshold that defines affordability, which is 2% of the median income, annual income of the district. As Kathy mentioned, the new draft permit, it does have some things that are going to cause Forestville to spend more money to comply, and they fall into a couple of categories. One of those are an increased sampling frequency of constituents that they're already monitoring. Some of those things they used to monitor for monthly are now required to be monitored weekly, and they have had several new constituents added to the testing regime to build a body of data to check performance of the plant in other areas. At one time, we estimated that those additional testing costs would run to somewhere around $70,000 per year. I think that's probably a little bit on the high side now after Kathy has made some adjustments on our behalf, but still on the order of tens of thousands of dollars per year. The other two things that are a little bit troubling is this copper water effects ratio study that you were just talking about, and it does range in the $30,000 to $100,000 world. I was kind of excited to hear that 30 or 35 might be possible, because we had a subconsultant working with us that performed the study for the town of Windsor's plant, and it was the $100,000 number. So it would be really great if that was a less expensive thing. But nevertheless, there have been a number of water studies completed around the state. They almost always result in a water effects ratio of greater than one, which is what is being used right now to establish their discharge limit. And that ratio usually ends up being somewhere between 3.5 and 10. So it would be nice for small districts to be able to take advantage of kind of the results of those and just apply them. The new recycled water analysis and reporting, I think, is a reasonable thing to do. But again, it does add a lot of cost to the district. So the worst study in this recycled water business is probably a $50,000 to $100,000 kind of one-time expenditure exercise over the next five-year period. Unfortunately, all of those costs that I just mentioned, they're really not going to do much to improve the basic performance of the plant. They're just collecting data to show that they might not be performing correctly, and which exposes them to the opportunity for fines. And it also, in the process, is a double-edged sword. It reduces the amount of money that they have available to actually perform normal operation and maintenance that could make a real difference in making the plant operate to its highest potential. I would predict that the cost of compliance with the new permit will probably contribute to pushing rates into the $150 a month per ESD within the next 3 years. If the data that we're going to collect in associated with this new permit is looked at 5 years hence, and it's determined that Forestville needs to move to an even higher level of performance, I really think they'll be at risk of some kind of financial collapse or hardship. I mean, we've already seen people in town like the high school and the elementary school and the laundromat come into the board meeting and say, I can't afford the sewer bill that you were given. They ask for a reduction in their ESDs, or they may even go out of business altogether just because they cannot afford it anymore. And those kind of things can definitely start a downward revenue spiral and a downward community spiral that aren't good things. So I really think for small communities, small plants like this one, especially tertiary plants that are producing high quality effluent, something needs to change. You know, some process needs to be changed. There needs to be some accommodation to make them different than the city of San Francisco or the city of Santa Rosa. And they just don't have the economy of scale to absorb these kind of costs. The two things that I thought of is the five-year permit renewal cycle. You know, if that could be stretched out to a longer period, it would give them more time to react and gradually increase rates and collect money to deal with the new stringent requirements that seem to come every time. And also the minimum mandatory penalties of $3,000 for every instance of an exceedance of a discharge limit. That $3,000 is applied whether, again, you're the city of San Francisco or you are the Forestville Water District. And it seems like there should be some flexibility or adjustment made for the two different classes of plants. So current process really not functioning that well for small facilities. So I'm really just here to ask the board to take a critical look at the rules and regulations and the basin plan that contribute to all this stuff and try to make some adjustments in it. Now, even if you could lobby or I don't know what you call it, but talk to the state board and the EPA to see if there is some adjustment of category that can be made on their end and just kind of try to develop a pragmatic approach to the whole process. So it could start with you. If you guys could change just a little bit, it would be really helpful. So that's it.
Thank you for that. A couple questions for you, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the site has about 18 million gallons of storage, if I do my math right, which is quite a, is that correct?
Quite a lot. I think that is about right.
Okay.
You might, with Iron Horse, yeah.
Yeah, and I combined them. I did combine them that way. When and a dry weather flow that is a hundredth of that, less than a hundredth of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this site also has an NPDES permit because it discharges the surface waters here. And so how much, can I ask, how much actually discharge to surface water to Jones Creek occurs in a given year? How many days on average or how much volume on average is actually going?
Ron might be better able to answer that, but the period is generally very small, a two-month period from late December to late February, I guess would be a, yeah, maybe you would.
No, please, come up.
All basically depends on rainfall.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, so depending on rainfall is the indicator on how long and how many gallons we will have to discharge it in one season.
Does additional, because I've heard also that there's potentially additional ag rec areas out there that you could then provide this water to, because it is a high-quality effluent, and it is eligible under the recycled water policy for ag use. And does that begin to become part of the equation of solving some issues here?
Yeah, I mean, it's already part of the equation as far as consideration goes. You know, the problem is storage. And
yeah.
So we have been in conversation with Sonoma Cutrer Vineyards, which owns a big parcel of land across Highway 116 from the plant, trying to interest them in constructing or enlarging an existing storage pond that they have on their property. They have expressed an interest, but the economy is not quite working out for them. Their pond that they have right now is an on-stream pond. They are trying to negotiate water rights for that. They take surplus water from the water agency right now, which is generally cut off for them, so that is kind of what is driving them in our direction. But it's certainly a focus of ours to try and bring them on board in that capacity. But even so, the recycled water problem doesn't make expenditures of money stop. Regulations are growing
it's not a free thing.
Yeah.
At the same time, you mentioned, Dave, Grayton and economies of scale. Does Grayton offer any possibilities? It sounds like you're connected to Grayton. I know you are with a pipe anyway, mm-hmm. but do they offer any possibility of economies of scale? I mean, these are essentially sister plants that were from the water agency days, I believe.
Right, yeah. And there are possibilities there. I think the logistics are difficult, certainly, until they achieve a tertiary level of treatment, transferring water back and forth, and who stores what and who takes what at any given time. You know, right now, Forestville does not certainly have the capacity to treat to the tertiary level the flows of both communities. So,
any other board member comments or questions? Please.
Sorry. How much is it a month, did you say, for the fees for the folks?
For the user fees, right now it's about $110.
Does that include water, too, or is that just sewage?
No, that's just sewer.
Wow.
No, sorry, and you said they would go up to potentially 150?
About 150, okay. Yeah.
Let me ask, I have a speaker card for you. Ron, you're at the table. It's your microphone, so please, whatever you want to add.
I just had a brief statement that I'd like to read, if that was okay. First, I'd like to thank the board for allowing me to speak here today and to state that I have the utmost respect for Kathy and the staff of the regional board and want to assure the board that my comments are in no way attack on Kathy or the staff, but are intended to draw attention to a system in which my opinion seems to be flawed. Next, I would like to address the issue of the change in the effluent monitoring requirements from monthly to weekly, as required by this new permit. The regional board staff has stated that these permits are necessary due to the fact that the levels of constituents can change based upon operating conditions and in the plant and as fluctuations in the creek flow. The effluent constituents do not vary widely for the simple reason that there is little to no industry tied to our system. As a matter of fact, the majority of our influent is comprised basically of residential type usage, and as far as the creek levels are concerned, there are already a mechanism in place to compensate for variations in creek flow. So I would submit to the board that the reason behind the more frequently testing may be inaccurate and needs to be reevaluated. In addition to the more frequent testing, the district is being asked to perform an expensive water effects ratio study related to copper. This WER study is estimated to cost up to $100,000. There may be cheaper alternatives, but they all cost money. The accumulated costs of the additional testing and studies are all going to put additional burdens on an already heavily burdened ratepayer, especially when you consider that there are only 450 active sewer hookups to split the cost between. The regional board staff has written that it is their belief, based upon the median income level of Forestville ratepayer from the 2010 census, that these additional costs should not be a large burden to the ratepayers. I believe this to be a flawed model to use, as it is the small amount of the wealthy people in Forestville that drive up the median income level of the area. As I work and live in Forestville, it is obvious to me that the majority of the citizens are not earning great deals of money, and many of them could be considered the working poor or just plain and simply the poor. So I believe it is irresponsible to keep asking these people for more money. Inasmuch as the Forestville Water District and its staff is always concerned about the quality of the water we discharge, I respectfully submit to the board that a more sensible approach needs to be adopted when issuing new report of waste charge discharge permits. This approach should be based upon user size and discharge gallonage rather than the perceived median income levels and a basin plan, which was written several years ago, which may need to be reevaluated because the one-size-fits-all approach may end up hurting far more communities and its people than it helps. Thank you.
Any board member comments or questions?
Just quickly, has there been any research to subsidize the low income in any way or any other agencies you're working with? And my first response, though, is just seeing Grayton on the same map and the same, you know, couple inches. I don't know how far away Grayton is and what you're doing to work with them to sort of combine the, you know, forces. I'm just curious how you're.
Well, we have developed a pretty good working relationship with Grayton's general manager and their staff for as far as last year when there was a late rain and we ran out of storage capacity and it was after discharge season, and as there's no mechanism in place to make considerations for late rains, fortunately, we are allowed to park water in Grayton's ponds and bring it back for the summer. Other than that, we'd have faced heavy discharge violation fines.
What are their rates in Grayton?
I believe they're about 100, 150 more a year for ESD.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and you know, this isn't in particular just you guys. This is something that we have seen before for sure. And I think there's a part of this that's definitely process. There's a big part of it. You know, like I said, this is a whopper permit. In fact, you know, Kathy even recognized that from the very beginning, given that, you know, I think part of it is, you know, MPDS permit, part of it's all the requirements out there. Part of it is the ag rec that goes on top of this. And there's just, you know, kind of many reasons why. But from your standpoint, you're seeing a plant that has, you know, consideration in our area, a pretty small effluent volume per year. Your dry flows are pretty small, less than 150,000 gallons a month on dry flow. You know, not a lot of options out there on the horizon for trying to make a permit like this less.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to that. I don't know how far that gets us down the road, but I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here. So,
well, as David said, I mean, I guess we need to kind of spur a movement to make changes in the way these permits are issued, make changes in the laws, make considerations for smaller districts or agencies that
planets simply can't afford to run on the same levels as the large ones, because if they don't, sooner or later, the small districts will disappear, and somehow they'll have to run because the sewer systems will be there, and I have no idea who will take over, who will run, and who will be able to afford it.
Well, the other thing is, Ron, you know, I admit that, you know, Bill Massey's outside our room here, but and I know how he's tied, you know, he's part of your clan. He's been on your board, I believe, but he's a champion of rural water and small systems, and he's beat that drum for a long time. This, again, is not a problem that's unique to Forestville, and we're fairly sympathetic to it. I believe our staff is, too. So,
well, I'd also add to that appreciative of, you know, your recognition that we're kind of bound to a framework right now. And instead of being really heated about it, just giving us some encouragement to try to, you know, bring it, you know, continue to bring it to our attention. But it's important to remind the board members as well. You know, we do have, you know, a champion of the cause who isn't in here right now. And, you know, we take really good heart that he's fighting that fight. But it's a good reminder for us here, too. So, you know, thanks for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. Kathy, can I ask that you come back up? Do you have any closing arguments or comments based on the testimony?
I took a few notes here. Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, staff has been challenged, you know, with some of the logistics of working with the permit document itself, but Forestville has brought up additional issues, you know, that relate to the bigger process issues, some of which we as staff can't do anything about, such as the 5-year permit terms that comes out of, you know, the Clean Water Act, the MMP regulations, you know, those are set in the state law. You know, but we do sympathize that these things, you know, are harder to absorb in a smaller district. That is why we did try really hard to, make changes and simplify and not put requirements where we didn't think we needed to. I think both Ron and David mentioned, you know, the fact that, you know, the additional monitoring, you know, question whether it's going to produce data that is meaningful. And, the two main areas where we increased monitoring requirements were for temperature and dissolved oxygen for discharges to Jones Creek. And that only applies when they're actually discharging to the creek. And that was for the purpose of assessing a little bit more closely, you know, whether, you know, there are any impacts to the creek, because it is a very small creek. Forestville is allowed to discharge to Jones Creek, but at 1% of the flow of Green Valley Creek. So that can result in a higher percentage of discharge to the creek. So that is one area that we asked for increases. And certainly, you know, monitoring can always be reduced once we've got some data to show, you know, what we're looking for. The other area is with regard to nutrients. And I think Forestville is the last of my set of dischargers where we've added even monitoring for ammonia for discharges to surface waters. And obviously we need to look at that because ammonia is toxic to aquatic life. And then we've asked for the full nutrient suite for reclamation to comply with the recycled water policy. But again, we built in the provision to reduce monitoring requirements once we've got some data, and if that data shows no reasonable potential. Am I getting long-winded?
No, not at all. I just wanted to comment.
Yeah. And then the water effect ratio, you know, they brought up, you know, the thought of could they somehow get a number applied based on what we've seen statewide. And the water effect ratio study is a very scientific study. It's site specific. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we've talked to US EPA and you know, they've said there's no way that we can just take a number, you know, the lowest number, say, that we've seen statewide or region-wide, you know, that is something that has to be done, you know, on a site-specific basis. Do you want to add something?
This is Mona Doherty with the Core Regulatory Unit. I just wanted to add briefly that we are certainly not unsympathetic to the issues that that Forestville raises. Unfortunately, because of this type of permit, it gives staff the least discretion of any of our permits that we work with.
Can I ask, is that because it's an MPDS permit, discharge to surface water?
Yes.
So if this were a WDR, you're saying that you would have much more discretion?
We would have much more discretion. There are both at the federal and state level many laws and regulations because of this type of permit that we are bound by.
Understood.
So we are sympathetic, and we are looking to see what we can do on our level, especially to address some of the issues. And I think that Kathy and John Short made a lot of effort to address some of the monitoring issues. But I just wanted to point out kind of on a global level that because of the nature of the permit, it allows staff the least amount of discretion of any of our other actions that we take.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that clarification. And I think that everybody's in agreement here. Nobody's blaming you guys for writing a permit that's per the requirements. I think the frustration is the requirements as they apply to large systems, and small systems like this just seem inequitable in some way. And I get the surface water discharge, I really do.
And as staff, we struggle with this issue quite a bit, and would love to look for ways to, you know, resolve and help it in the future too.
Any board member comments, questions?
I think your EO had something that she wanted to chime in on, or
are you chiming?
I would. Thank you very much.
Ms. Colpin.
Thank you, Mr. Noren. Mr. Massey, as you've all pointed out, has been a champion for small systems. This region, I think, very often is in one of the leadership places pushing small system issues. One thing that, as a new board chair, you might want to bring up in the statewide calls that you will be participating in, is there a couple other regions that also see this as an important issue to work on? There's a whole series of issues, whether they're NPDS or WDR, the small facilities. There are a number of issues that are not well dealt with out of Sacramento or by US EPA. And while it's really hard to affect the national dialogue, we do have more control over what happens in Sacramento. And perhaps that is something that the chairs from those particular regions might want to sponsor a work group. You could even assign Mr. Massey to it if you wanted to.
Oh, I like that.
I'm quite creative, as you know.
Delegation sets you free.
But
after
something
all.
That, you know, to try to focus the effort a little bit more, because it's becoming increasingly a burden on the small systems. And this is just one set of issues that they're bringing forward.
Absolutely.
Today.
Well, the one thing I would ask, too, is you, gentlemen, I mean, you have an experience that's very tangible and very topical to this. And, you know, I'd like to have a further conversation with you. If that's a direction we go or something that we want to consider, we need to tap into some of the regulated community out there, our staff, and what the limitations are within a process and system that is part of the problem, per se. Thank you for that very much. Any other comments or questions? Okay, so we have to vote on these separately. So first we will take the cease and desist order, which, let me make sure I got it right. That's right, so we do a poll vote on the cease and desist order. Would anybody like to make a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the...
really having trouble today. All right. I'll move order number R1-20112-00. 111, a cease and desist order from discharging or threatening to discharge effluent. And I, just to be sure, orders number R1-2004-0027 and R1-2012-0012 and WDID number 1B831-000-SON and NPDS number CA0023043 Sonoma County.
Nicely done at 4:30 in the afternoon.
After I got my mic on, I'm really good. You know?
I'll second.
Fantastic. We're going to do a poll vote, so I will take you one at a time. Ms. Tynes?
Yes.
Ms. Harris?
Yes.
Mr. Hales?
Yes.
Mr. Corbett?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. The CDO is passed. Move on to the consideration of adoption of R1-2012-0012.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we adopt R1-2012-0012, the adoption of waste discharge requirements for Forestville Water District Wastewater Treatment Reclamation Disposal Facility, WDID number 1B83100OSON and MPDS number CA0023043, Sonoma County.
Two for two.
I'll second that.
Fantastic. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Done. Thank you very much. Okay. Can I pick on climate? We have an update on the Klamath TMDL implementation, which is an information item for us. We'll take that on item number 15.